For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. The teacher walkout began on Monday and seems to be growing stronger as the week goes by. The educators pushed lawmakers into passing a tax on Amazon marketplace vendors, and the Senate could vote on a ball and dice gaming for tribes. Ryan, are you surprised by the power of this rally?
Not at all. I mean, this is easily one of the most historic, if not the most historic, protest event in the state's history. Tens of thousands of teachers, students, their supporters, other public employees. The turnout has been amazing. I've been out there every single day this week. And I think that there is this sense that maybe the teachers would begin to lose momentum after day one, and then it's like, well, maybe they'll lose momentum after day two. They haven't. I feel like that the intensity and their commitment to seeing this through has only increased as the week has gone by. And every day that goes by, it seems like lawmakers are not learning, because we see more and more lawmakers using things like these old tired tactics of saying, well, these are paid protesters or they're actors or outside state instigator groups. I haven't seen anything like that. The ACLU's had legal observers inside and outside the building. These are teachers from districts. And then lawmakers using the kind of condescension that, whether it's on the floor and meeting with some of these teachers as they come through, it's like they're not learning. So the Amazon tax, I think that was a good first start. But that only gets, you know, a little less than half of the revenue that was lost whenever they took the hotel occupancy tax off the table after last week's historic vote.
Neva.
Well, I think what we have is, you're right, Ryan, it's historic, but also what we have developing, I think, is this give and take with the lawmakers and their constituents. And I think what I've heard and observed during this week is that that the lawmakers have been very attentive to constituents from their districts. Now, you know, folks can be all over that building and trying to meet multiple, you know, lawmakers, but the bottom line is they're interested in hearing from their folks in their districts, in their schools, and hearing what they have to say and have that give and take. And I think that's a healthy process. The question, I think, still overarching all of this as they go through the bills, figure out what they're going to do on the money side, is at what point does public sentiment out there beyond the teachers take a turn? And I think that's one of the things that's the unknown, is if this goes on indefinitely, at what point does the public and do these parents that are now, particularly in the metropolitan areas, having to shift and make bigger concessions in terms of figuring out what to do when their kids aren't in school for a prolonged period of time? Those are the questions that I don't think anyone can really intelligently assess at this point. Bottom line is they've got to get to some resolution. Does it seem like there's a real game plan on anyone's side? It doesn't appear to many people that that's the case.
Well, I think the biggest one is going to be capital gains. I think that's one they're really pushing. But also a poll did actually show that,
right,
like 58% of Republicans support the teacher walkout and 70-something percent of parents.
Almost 70%. And that 70% was up 12% from last week. So momentum, right, among the public has been growing for this. I think that if the teachers can sustain this at the very least until next week, through the end of next week, which is filing period, I mean, the number of teachers that have been up there saying, I want you to step up for education, and if you don't, I will, that becomes a much more powerful statement whenever they can just walk down the hall and literally file against these lawmakers. If this sustains through filing period, that's going to be really powerful. The other thing is that I hope that it's the teachers don't feel the urgency to give in early. And from the teachers that I visited with in and out of that building, they're not ready to give in. They are upset with legislators trying to legisplain to them, telling them, you know, that you don't understand how this process works. And they get it. These teachers are getting it. And it's almost like watching a football team that's been running the same three plays over and over again, and they're winning, but then the opposition realizes, oh, wait a second, they're just running these same three plays over and over again. And they start to account for it, and then they start to win. That's what's happening out at the Capitol right
now. I like
now.
The fact that you've coined the term legisplain.
Well, it's not mine. I heard it from a teacher in a rotunda last night, so I don't want to take credit for it.
Neva, well, I do actually want to actually ask you about Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week is filing. If these teachers stick around until that point, Do you think it will impact these lawmakers as they're starting to face some opposition?
I think it remains to be seen. I think lawmakers that are looking at, do I want to run for re-election if I'm up this year? I think it's one of many things that factor into that equation. I don't think it makes them move, you know, hard one direction or the other. I think it's part of the process that they go through every time they look at being on the ballot. Does it infuse some new faces, more teachers, other folks into the mix in terms of people that may run for office? Maybe, but that's a big consideration on their part too. This is not some flippant, I'm just going to put my name on the ballot and, you know, do I give up my teaching career? Do I look at, you know, making this shift? If this is something I really want to do, is it something where groups are really looking at handicapping these races and deciding are there places where we really want to concentrate? That those things go on every single time we get to up to filing period. It will be interesting. We're normally accustomed to a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday filing period. Mm-hmm. Now we've got this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Mm-hmm. It does kind of throw everything off kilter a little bit. If you've still got, you know, literally thousands of people in the building beyond the normal routine group that are lawmakers, lobbyists, agency heads and others, what that does, I mean, it creates a lot of uncertainty and certainly some chaos that we'll just have to wait till the dust settles to see what has really transpired.
It could be very interesting next week.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that a lot of these teachers, that they're planning on sticking it out, you know, a huge congrats to OEA, OPEA, and other folks that have been putting this together. I mean, it is just magnificent. If you haven't been out at the Capitol, you know, obviously I support the educators and what they're trying to get done. But even if you don't, go out there and look at this, witness this, you know, get a sense of what real democracy looks like in action. And I think some of these lawmakers that are really upset and lashing out at the teachers, what it is that this is the first time that they've ever had to really explain themselves in this way to their constituents in these numbers. And the teachers have something here. They've got a special momentum, and if they can just hang on to it, I think that it'll set a new line in the sand. It will set a new normal for how this legislature should work.
And I don't sense that there's a lot of lawmakers. I haven't heard that there are a lot of folks that are really in a combative, you know, mode out there with these teachers and others, parents, students, those that are at the Capitol trying to express their point of view. I think it's the give and take. Very healthy, and I think for the most part, with very few incidents. I mean, it's been a very modeled look at seeing how this process should work when people want to have their voice heard. So
yeah, it's the controversial ones.
Yeah,
that
it is.
To make
I
the
mean,
news.
You, yeah. the sheer numbers, I think, is what, you know, what not only gives attention here in Oklahoma, but it's become national news. Mm-hmm. I mean, front page of the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times. I mean, this is a storyline that certainly the country's paying attention to, as well as Oklahoma.
And it could spread. It could spread to other public employees, DOC, some of their facilities. If, you know, if 5 or 10 employees called in on the same day in some of those DOC facilities, all of a sudden you've got the National Guard taking over a prison in the state of Oklahoma. This is because, you know, this crisis that we're seeing with education and the kind of response that it's spurred at the state capitol, it goes well beyond education. So whether it's correction or healthcare workers, you know, what's next?
Yeah. Now I want to talk about that. Tulsa oilman George Kaiser says more tax hikes are needed. Kaiser says the increases to pay for education and state worker pay raises last week don't go far enough. Neva Kaiser supported increasing the gross production tax to 5%, but now says lawmakers should look at other funding.
Well, in fact, he went so far as to say they needed twice the funding. And here's someone making those comments and statements during and after a Rotary Club presentation here in Oklahoma City this week. I mean, it's the billionaire talking about the budget, and there's some backdrop to that in terms of the focus. Again, it's not any new revelation. We know that we have these issues. The question is, how are we going to address them? I think these business people and others trying to infuse their kind of their commentary and their point of view is very germane. But the relevant part is lawmakers have got to decide what they're going to do. And at this point, again, they've got to come up with a plan and then figure out a way to get the votes to execute that plan. And that's the part that we haven't really seen come to light yet.
Ryan.
Well, and they've got to have that additional revenue if they're going to be able to sustain the promises that they made even last week. I mean, right now, with the education budget as it is, even if we move forward into next year with nothing else than what happened last week, we're going to be probably $100 million upside down just in education. And that's, you know, largely due to the fact that the cigarette tax is going to be moved back over to healthcare. At least presumably it will. So how do we continue to pay for the promises that were made last week? The only way that you do that is to put new revenue on the table. You know, the Amazon sales tax bill last night, and Representative Inman, I tell you what, you know, everybody watched this guy drop out of the governor's race, say he was going to resign from the legislature, and then come back. And I think for folks that are supportive of educators, we can be really glad that he did. He has just been magnificent this week on the House floor. Representative Inman had an amendment to the Amazon sales tax bill last night that would put 100% of that into education. Mm-hmm. But that's just $20 million. But $20 million in the scheme of where we are, the hole where we are, $20 million is not really a lot. So capital gains is about $100 million. Democrats have been trying to put that up for a vote. It's already passed out of the Senate. If it can pass out of the House, it goes to the governor's desk. That's $100 million on the table right there. Combined with Amazon, that's 120. I think income tax needs to be on the table as well. But I doubt that we'll see an income tax increase this year, but who knows? But capital gains, that should just be a no-brainer. Around 800 Oklahoma families benefit from this deal that costs the state about $100 million.
Well, meanwhile, you had the state chamber and the Oklahoma City Chamber kind of going at each other. State chamber saying they didn't want any tax increases, and Roy Williams at the Greater Oklahoma City Chamber saying, you know what, people don't look at taxes, they look at lifestyle. And you know, so people are fighting even amongst themselves within the business community.
Well, and I would disagree with the comeback of Representative Inman into the process. I mean, many people, I think at least folks that I've talked to, some on both sides of the aisle, have said that really it's been a big disruption to have Representative Inman kind of infuse himself back into this mix, that there was much more of an across-the-board conversation and the ability for some serious negotiations to go on prior to kind of this change in the chemistry on the Democrat side in the House. So it remains to be seen. I mean, you cannot just have a totally combative situation, you know, where one or two people are trying to dictate the landscape for 101 in the House or on the Senate side as well. So it does remain to be seen, but I would argue that it hasn't all been positive in terms of what's occurred since Representative Inman has stepped up his rhetoric in the House.
Well, you know, Representative Inman, when he put his amendment out there on Wednesday night for the Amazon sales tax for 100% of that to go to education, you know, they went at ease in the House, and you had two members of the Democratic caucus, Inman included, and Representative Eccles and Speaker McCall go back, and they negotiated that deal out. They came back and they adopted that amendment without really any debate whatsoever. And so, I mean, I think that whether it's Inman or whomever it is, you know, getting that out there and having this conversation about what other revenue should be on the table, because what came out in that debate on Wednesday night was that the Republicans had agreed among themselves that they were in a caucus meeting last week that if they raised gross production, there were no other, and the other taxes that were raised last week, nothing else was going to come out, and that capital gains especially wasn't going to come out. Well, that's a deal inside that caucus. That is not a hard and fast universal rule that's written into the laws of nature. They could change that tomorrow. If they're saying they can't hear other revenue bills, it's only because the Republican majority in the House, has decided they won't hear them. And so having somebody like Scott Inman every day saying he wants to suspend the rules and hear capital gains, and the teachers saying we want this, and Inman being their voice, and among other folks, Representative Walkie and Bennett and Virgin, that have been their voice out there, having them press that issue every single day and making those Republicans, reminding everybody, where's everybody here? Because the idea that this is a fact, that we can't hear other revenues, is just a fantasy.
Pressing issues, though, and not getting results is the rub, and I think that's where they've got to find that common ground. I mean, it's great to throw out the rhetoric, but at the end of the day, you've still got to have these bills move through the process. The Amazon bill didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen, in just a few hours, one evening. It's been an ongoing process and an ongoing, I'm sure, much negotiation, you know, with many parties on both sides in the conversations. So I think what really strikes me is the fact that leadership on both sides have really got to be forceful in coming to terms with how to move their votes to get to some resolution so that this thing doesn't drag on. What we don't need is gridlock, that what we find ourselves in is something that just now goes into slow motion through the end of this session, and who knows what happens after that.
Outgoing OU President David Boren is warning lawmakers of a looming cliff faced by Oklahoma colleges and universities. Boren points to massive cuts over the past decade to the state's higher education. Ryan, while all eyes this week have been on common education, should the legislature also be keeping an eye on higher ed?
Well, I mean, and I think that this just highlights that the fiscal mess that the state of Oklahoma is in goes well beyond common education. You know, whether it's corrections, public safety, roads and bridges, healthcare, you know, the delivery of core fundamental services, and education ought to be considered among those. Education's taken nearly a 20% hit. President Boren noted that whenever he came in to, when he assumed the presidency at the University of Oklahoma, nearly 50% of the cost of an education for a student there was paid for by the state. Now it's around 10 or 11%. You know, it's kind of a public university in name only at this point. And, you know, whenever, you know, I feel for President, incoming President Gallagly. I mean, you've got, you know, President Boren is basically, welcome to the Titanic, grab a life vest. And, and that's kind of, but that's the reality of what the university is facing right now. And I do think that, you know, President Boren made a strong point in saying, you know, shame on these legislators for running around in their campaign saying that they support all of these things, but then continuing to go to the legislature and vote against provisions that would actually provide the revenue to provide the services that they've promised in their campaigns. And that's the kind of attitude that has to change. And Jim Gallagly, the incoming president at the University of Oklahoma, if he's going to be successful, he cannot just fundraise his way out of this mess. He's got to go and change that culture at the state legislature.
Neither.
Well, and clearly, I mean, President Boren, as we've talked about, I mean, he, under his tenure as president, $3 billion has been raised in private funds. So clearly, the private sector has stepped up, and his point about the reduction in terms of the appropriations of state dollars. But when he was governor, there were fewer institutions of higher education in the state of Oklahoma. I mean, one of the things systemically in education and higher ed, just like in common ed, that have to be looked at are where are the reforms, where are the decisions going to be made in terms of curbing the growth or curbing additional institutions just because some rural community or some metropolitan area community wants to have, you know, more, either more in terms of community college or expansion. I mean, those things and the dollars attached are unsustainable. And I think that's where we have to get to is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, it's easy to talk about it in the overarching, just let's talk about higher ed or common ed. But when you start mining down and drilling down into those numbers, I think that's ultimately where a lawmaker is going to have to get is they're going to have to get into the weeds of where these dollars are going and figure out, do we want flagship universities, two major flagship universities that really do call attention across the country to the quality and the academic excellence, or do we water that down by just, you know, diluting it with more and more institutions that we cannot fully fund?
Ryan?
Well, you know, I think that I suppose that's one way of looking at it. I look at all of those community colleges. You know, I used to represent one at Seminole Community College, and mm-hmm. You know, President Boren had an instrumental role in bringing that about as a member of the legislature and then as governor, the community college system that we have in the state of Oklahoma. These community colleges and these regional universities provide an enormous amount of opportunity, not for just the students in those areas, but to provide a diversity in the types of educations that we're providing around the state of Oklahoma. USAO in Chickasha, one of the finest universities in the state, provides, it's a liberal arts college among a public university system in the state of Oklahoma. A remarkable education that you can get down there and at Chickasha. And, you know, not having that kind of, you know, that's a very different atmosphere than having two large flagship institutions that you're only providing. These community colleges are an investment, plain and simple. You know, when we are investing in higher education, whether it's to help somebody get an associate's degree, to go back and get some sort of training, job skill, to retool, you know, those are investments in those communities and investments in the state. So I know that the upfront expense can seem quite large, but I think the return on that investment has proven time and again one of the best ways that we can spend our state dollars.
And meanwhile, you've also got career tech, where a lot of people are saying we should be investing more into career tech because some kids aren't going to go to college. They need to get a career, and sometimes those careers
and
pay
I think
better
the,
than
and where clearly the need is there. I mean, regional universities, liberal arts universities. I mean, having those in place is key in the overall look at education. But we have to figure out where's the duplication. Where do we curb? You know, looking at future expansion, is that necessary while we're not fully funding, you know, areas that we already have and we already see the need, where there's decline in enrollment, where there's where there's movement in other directions in terms of where the students are really targeting, you know, their interest in terms of what the degrees are that are kind of the hot degrees mm-hmm. out there that people need more classes, they need that attention. Those are the things that need to be looked at, and it needs to be a cooperative look. I mean, this adversarial relationship, the universities and the lawmakers is not a good equation to try to have anything good come out for either side.
You know, I mean, it's going to run long, but I've got to do this. Former Oklahoma Attorney General and now head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, faces ethical questions related to his travel, living arrangements, and office spending. President Trump told Pruitt earlier this week he has Pruitt's back and to keep fighting. Neva, we're recording this on Thursday, and certainly anything could change in the next 24 hours. But what are your thoughts on Pruitt's
Well,
future?
I mean, Scott Pruitt has been on in the line of fire since he, took the oath and became the head of EPA. I think that's, as we've talked about before, I believe that's always going to be the case. I mean, this is a hot seat. He is certainly someone who has put himself in hot water, I mean, unquestionably, in terms of the focus in the media, even now with members of Congress and his own party, you know, coming out and, kind of taking him head on. So it's a slippery slope. I mean, does he survive? I mean, it was clear that the White House made a very directed attempt to kind of set the stage and say, you know, we've got your back. And yet you have others going on to the Sunday morning news programs, basically Chris Christie and others saying, I don't know how you survive this. And so there's a lot of mixed messages out there among the Republicans on Scott Pruitt. But at this point, I think we have to say, as long as the president says, I've got your back, then I think, like it or not, for the folks that are his detractors, he's going to be there to stay at least for a little while, it would appear.
Ryan, could there be a commemorative plate for Scott Pruitt coming up soon? I don't know.
Commemorative plate. Of all the people in the world that I'd want to say have my back, it would not be Donald Trump. this guy is... I mean, I think that, you know, President Trump's ideology is an ideology of President Trump. And if Scott Pruitt becomes an inconvenience for President Trump's image, then he's going to go. And we saw President Trump, I think that he likes to, play kind of the good cop for as long as he can. But even the White House press secretary yesterday, she was saying, well, we've got concerns about this. We're looking into this. I mean, Scott Pruitt went around the White House. He went to the White House and said, hey, I want to give raises to these two folks that I brought with me from Oklahoma. And they said no. And so he basically let them go and then reappointed them under a new section of law that allowed him to give them a raise without White House approval. That's the kind of, squirrely stuff that if you're going to, I mean, he's just poking an eye putting his finger in the eye at the White House. So he's picking a fight with the White House all the while. And he's renting this house for $50 a day. He says it's like an Airbnb situation. I've been using Airbnb since it came on board. $50 a night for an Airbnb at a really nice place in central Washington, it doesn't happen. You know, this is a sweetheart deal that he got. And even if it was above board, this guy should know. Scott Pruitt should know. This you don't do that. Even the appearance of that impropriety is one that he should avoid.
Right, but Pruitt was one of Trump's picks. I mean, one of his early picks for the EPA. So he's maybe feeling a little job security, especially when he hears from Trump saying that he's got.
Well, I mean, clearly EPA and the deregulatory attitude that the Trump administration has and what they want to do to dismantle much of what went on during the 8 years of the Obama administration, Scott Pruitt is their guy. I mean, he's bold. He's straight head on. Let's go for it. And that's what they want in that agency administrator right now. So as long as he can continue to do that and And you're right, Ryan. As long as the heat doesn't get so much so that some morning someone gets up and decides to tweet that it's over, then you know this will continue on. And so,
can I do that? Can I tweet that? Can I tweet that it's over for Scott Pruitt?
I don't know.
Anything can happen over the next 24 hours. You know, we don't know.
A leaked memo comes out this week, or just this morning, I think. We're taping Thursday morning. Just comes out saying that Scott Pruitt has now issued a memo saying that he, the head of the EPA, will sign off on all Clean Water Act requests, you know, for any sort of permits, that it's going to be him. So it's going to take it out of these regional field offices where people actually know the geography, actually know the science in that area. You're going to put it to this one guy in Washington sitting in his special phone booth listening to radio on his a coal-powered, diamond-encrusted radio in the EPA office. He's going to be doing this. So I think that, you know, that is the kind of administrator that President Trump wants, is somebody that just doesn't even care about the optics of taking power away from the experts in the field, and just saying, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to deregulate as much as I can. But I really think that he may have gone too far at this point. The travel, the apartment arrangement that he had with the lobbyist in D.C., I think that it just may become too much for him to sustain. Now, you know, that may tee him up to come back to Oklahoma and run for office.
Governor, senator. Sure.
Well, and you know, there's even kind of part of the rumor mill saying that he's considering a 2022 bid for the White House. I mean, you know, Scott Pruitt for president, and you know, maybe he sees the kind of corruption we've seen out of the Trump administration. 2024. Well, I mean, if Trump gets reelected, they might be reelecting somebody in 2022. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, Scott Pruitt may have gone too far at this point, but it really is. And we've got such a mercurial president. It's really going to depend on what side of the bed he wakes up on and you know, how he feels that Pruitt is reflecting on his image in the administration.
Check back into This Week in Oklahoma Politics next week. We might be talking about Scott Pruitt either way.
It's right. Filing week. I mean, if he's going to get fired, and if he gets fired before filing week next week, I think, you know, Todd Lamb and Nick Cornett.
Don't hold your breath.
everybody who's over on the Republican side running for governor.
I don't think anyone's going to lose.
Look in the rearview mirror, because if he gets fired on Sunday, and he's got between Wednesday and Friday to come down here and file
they
for governor.
They had an Oklahoman on point this morning, Thursday morning, that said, you know, he's still loved and worshipped here in Oklahoma. So, yeah, if he gets fired this week, maybe he could just go file for governor next week. Be very interesting. Thank you guys so much. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.